Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way. Presented by Cast Media and Soul Pancake.
Hello, Metaphysical Milkshakers. It's me, Rain Wilson.
And it is I, Reza Aslan.
And today, this week, really super excited to be speaking to this incredible young psychic guy, Tyler Henry. I want to learn about the life of a medium, but I also want to learn about grief because that gets at the root of why he does what he does. You know, anything having to do with like communicating with people on their side have to do with grief. But what are your thoughts on grief? Have you experienced any grief recently? You, your family, anything like that?
You know, I got a complicated relationship with grief, I guess. I don't know if I've ever truly grieved or felt grief. Had a weird thing, you know, one of my sons had a bird.
And
you know,
kind of, is it one of your chickens or is
no,
it a different...
not one of our many, many chickens, like an actual it wasn't a parrot, but it was kind of like a parrot. It was a very, very smart, sophisticated bird. When we bought him at the store, the store owner basically said, "Hey, yeah, this you could have conversations with this bird." And I was like, "Wow, that's so great! How do we do that?" It's like, you know, just easy. Spend maybe 30 to 90 minutes a day with him. I was like, 30 to 90 minutes a day? It's barely how much time I spend with my kids. I'm spending 30 to 90 minutes a day with the bird. But whatever, we got the bird, and my boy, you know, absolutely fell in love with him. And then, you know, it was like 4 or 5 years, but he just died. And oh boy, Rain. Oh yeah. Boy. Mm. My son grieved in a way I've never seen people grieve. He grieved in a way like a B movie actress in the 30s would grieve.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, full like chest pounding.
God, why?
Yeah. And Greek tragedy. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like this is what like my weakness as a dad. I just stood there. I didn't know what to do. I honestly didn't know how to respond. I was trying, you know, not to. I felt uncomfortable. I didn't know. Thank God, my wife Jessica stepped in. You know, she actually has, you know,
she
normal
can empathize
human emotions.
And she yeah. knew to hug him yeah, and she, to comfort
exactly,
him and
yes.
all of that, like human stuff.
Human things, human exactly. Stuff. What
you were like,
humans
I do not
do.
Know how to process this.
but it was so strange for me because I was like, where did he get this? Because that's not me. That's not how I
well,
deal with
Well, I think we
grief.
Know where he got it from. That goes to the center of something like, I my dad passed away a year and a half ago. But other than that, I didn't have anyone that I was really close to or family members that passed away. But growing up, I lost a lot of pets along the way. And I do think that pets are a good training ground for this circle of life and the grieving process too. You know, I was about 7 or 8 years old and I had these two gerbils I loved very much. Frederick and Nelson, and anyone who's from Seattle will understand that reference. And I took one outside and he was kind of like running around on this little patch of ground and he kind of ran at me. So I jumped up to kind of get out of the way and then he ran under my foot and I couldn't help it. And I landed on him. I landed on Nelson and crushed his little gerbil skull. And there was gerbil blood coming out. I was responsible for his death.
That's murder.
I was like 7, 8 years old. I just started to weep. My dad came out. I didn't know what to do. He was thrashing around and My dad grabbed him by the tail and went in the other room, and I heard the toilet flush. So I didn't really get a sense of closure with old Nelson. But there were several other pets that I lost along the way. And I think culturally it's very strange. People get so upset when dogs die and pets die. It's like we lost a family member. And it's like, but it kind of stops there. And it's like, yeah, you should grieve. You should cry. It is sad. They, you know, if you get a dog, you got 8 to 15 years of good times, and then it's gonna die. It's natural. It happens on farms. Animals are dying every single day. So that people don't necessarily take that next step of like, and I hope you close the loop with your son of like, hey, guess what? We all are going to die. Just like, what was the bird's name?
Cracker.
Just like Cracker. Wait a second. Is that kind of a racist name?
I don't think he realized the racism in the name, but yeah, I could see that.
Hey, Cracker.
Hey, Cracker. No, but you're absolutely right. And this brings up, I think, a larger point that we want to tackle this week on the Metaphysical Milkshake Pod, which is, how do we grieve? What is grief? I've experienced grief in a vastly different way than you have. And I mean, what does that say, you know, in the way that we think about grief as a process, as an emotion? And, you know, we could have had a lot of different guests come on and talk about this. We could have had like a therapist or a counselor or a psychiatrist, psychologist, maybe a doctor, you know.
Or a war survivor or something.
Yes,
like
a war survivor. Yeah. Or my son. But we thought we would do something a little bit different. On the program today, we have a medium, Tyler Henry, medium to the stars, celebrity medium. Did you know that there was such a thing as a celebrity medium, Rain? You're a celebrity.
I didn't know that. Well, does that mean they are famous or they only do readings for famous people?
I think in his case, it's both. Tyler Henry is an author. He identifies as a clairvoyant. That means his like primary way of receiving information from the beyond is through visions, images, pictures. He does these readings where he connects people with their loved ones who have passed. He's done this on TV. He had a show on E! Hollywood Medium with Tyler Henry that was on for 4 seasons. And now he's got a new Netflix show, Life After Death with Tyler Henry, and a brand new book called Here and Hereafter. And so let's talk about the grieving process with a guy who talks to dead people, because that makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense. But I want to say celebrity medium, there's a list here of the celebrities. I don't know if they qualify as celebrities.
Oh, stop.
Okay, let's go through some of these people. I'm so sorry. No. I'm going to dig into this. John Sally. I vaguely remember he was a basketball player. Alan Thicke.
Alan Thicke. Are you kidding? Come on.
Was he? Oh, he was on a sitcom in like the 80s or something?
Yeah, it was
okay.
Safa?
I don't know who some of these people are, and I don't think that I think qualifying Tom Arnold and Jaleel Wright as white as celebrities is kind of pushing the envelope here. But nonetheless, give him the benefit of the doubt. He wrote a great book. Let's bring him on the show. Tyler Henry.
Tyler Henry, thank you so much for joining us on the Metaphysical Milkshake Pod. So exciting to have you here.
Did you say Tyler Herbie?
I said Tyler Henry. Did I swallow that?
It sounded like Tyler, like Percy or Percy.
Tyler Hershey.
Yeah, something Tyler weird. Anyways, it's Tyler Henry, world-renowned medium, psychic, television personality, wise person, and kind of guru-esque philosopher.
Here's the book.
Of that's great giving wisdom. Me way too much credit. Thank you, though.
Here and Hereafter
it.
Is the brand new book. Tyler, let's just get right into it. What number am I thinking of?
Oh, let's see. I'm sensing between 1 and 1,000.
Oh, my God.
Somewhere in there.
Oh, my God. That's right.
There's a statistical chance, but yeah.
No, it was 18,637.
debunked.
Boom. You're a fraud. That's it.
Busted.
I'm practically Harry Houdini. No. Okay. So we've introduced you as a medium. You talk about yourself as a medium. You're often described with that label. And I'm just curious, what the hell does that even mean? Like, what is that?
Looking at the camera, he looks like a medium. He does not look, I think large would be too drapey. Extra large definitely would not work. I'm going to say medium
short. During the pandemic, I actually gained about 30 pounds. So now I'm actually medium.
You did not. If this is you with an extra 30 pounds.
Wow.
Give me to my 30s. I'll get large and then it'll be really ironic.
No, seriously. Tell us, how should we think about what a medium is? You know, like, how do you think about it? Are you okay with the label? Do you like the label?
Yeah. I think there are probably better terms that exist. I just think it's such a tricky thing because medium is such an encompassing term. Mm. When I think of what a medium is, it really is defined as an intermediary or someone who's in the middle. And so it's kind of a generic term in the sense that that could apply to a lot of things. People who act as intermediaries religiously, spiritually, personally, I think religion very much ties into that role of kind of people taking on that mediumistic quality themselves. So there's a lot of applications of it. It's a very general term, but it just is somebody who receives intuitive information with the goal of delivering it to other people.
And the goal of delivering it to other people with the purpose of what?
Validation. And that's really the most specific thing for me. When I do a reading, I have to be able to connect to information that can't be researched, can't be guessed, can't be gleaned from someone's body language. And when I go into reading, I never know what to expect. So I have to just try to give people what I feel I'm meant to deliver. I liken my job to that of a mailman. So I'm not writing the letters, I'm just delivering the message. And I think that's actually a very practical way to understand what a medium is. We may not always know who's giving us the messages or even what they are, but it's the role itself that a medium takes.
I'll tell you why I like the term intermediary, because the idea of like an individual who stands between two different planes, right? The world of the living and the world of the dead, this world and the world beyond, or however you want to talk about it. This is something that exists in all cultures, all religions. It goes back to our prehistoric Paleolithic past. It's actually what the definition of shaman is. The shaman is the individual who can commune with both planes and communicate from one plane to the other. So I really like that idea of intermediary. Though, if I were you, may I suggest clairvoyant? Because it just sounds so...
It sounds so much more sophisticated.
Sexy,
it's a French word. It means clear sight. And it is a way that, you know, people sometimes receive information. But yeah, it's a lot sexier of a word than medium. Mm-hmm.
So I have a story to tell you.
Great.
Can I tell you a psychic story? How is a medium different than a psychic?
So I think all mediums have a psychic ability, but not all psychics are mediums. Ah. That's kind of the distinction I make. We think of psychic as typically referring to telling the future. I refer to it really as just anything extrasensory. And mediums doing what they do have to connect on that extrasensory level. So I consider it a facet of a psychic ability, but not all psychics necessarily communicate with the dead.
I hate to correct you, Tyler, but I believe the plural is media.
Media.
You know what? Am I wrong? Am I wrong about
that? Some people call me medians, and I'm like, no, I'm not the thing in the middle of the road.
All right, Rain, tell us your medium story, which, by the way, I'm sure is your favorite thing, Tyler, is when people tell you medium stories.
They're my favorite. And it's amazing how much people have in common, actually. You'd be surprised.
Well, no, this is a great story. You're going to love this story. So my wife made friends with a psychic in Hollywood. I forget her name. This was a long time. It was like almost 20 years ago. And then my friend Richard went and saw her and she did a psychic reading and she's like, oh man, I'm getting just a big impression that something with the letter A. And he's like, no. And he's like, no, it's with the letter A, like someone in your life with a letter A, someone. He's like, no, not your mom, dad, someone who passed away, sister, letter A, nothing. He's like, no, nothing. He's like, she's like, I don't know what to say. I'm just getting the strongest impression of the letter A, and I don't know what that means. 2 days later, he's working as a background actor for a commercial shoot for Sotheby's. And they're like auctioning off silly things. Like, oh, here's a giraffe, and they're auctioning a giraffe, and they're bringing out different things. And they're like, okay, we need someone to hold this Greek statue. We need someone to lead this giraffe. And we here, you, and they point to my friend Richard, we need you to hold this. And they hand him a gigantic letter A. And he spends the entire day, 2 days later after his reading, holding an enormous letter A all day long.
That's bizarre.
How's that? It's pretty good, right?
Here's what I get from that story. Celebrities can purchase giraffes. Is that a thing?
Big letters?
It is. Well, we have a zonkey. You haven't seen my donkey zebra hybrid? I mean, come on.
Is that like a badonka donkey? No, that's more the after show.
All right, you. But listen, when you're getting started as a medium, Tyler, how does that work exactly? Like, you're getting started, like, before you became famous Hollywood medium, like, did you have a shingle out on, you know, Santa Monica Boulevard with a neon sign that said palmistry? Or did you get a bank loan? You have to go in the bank and say, I want $10,000 to start a medium. Like, literally, how do you start that business?
Sure. Well, for me, I graduated high school when I was 16 years old, and I had the goal at the time of trying to become a hospice nurse. So I enrolled in community college. I was going down that route. I knew at that age that I had this ability. I just didn't really know how I was going to apply it. And so hospice felt like a natural synergy to be able to be there for people who were dying and their families. But quietly, I was doing readings through word of mouth, and people would meet with me after class, and I would, you know, do readings for them. And at the time, it was like $20-$30, and it was just to try to kind of meet the cost of textbooks. And so I didn't really think that it was going to go anywhere, but very quickly it did. And within a year, I had people coming to my front door. Word of mouth spread very quickly. And I actually ended up reading the dean of the college, of all people. And I ran into him one day, and he actually encouraged me to leave school because he had such a profound experience. And he said, you know, you have this ability. I know it's real. You should really think about maybe using it. And so when the dean of the college tells you to leave, you know, you kind of have permission. And so I did. I left school and I continued doing readings. And by the age of 19, I was offered a television show. So it was a very, very short period.
How do you go from doing readings? This was in Fresno?
This was near Fresno in Hanford, California, yes.
Okay, so you're doing readings at age 18 in Hanford, California. How do you go from that to TV show? I'm sorry, I just need to connect the dots here.
Yeah.
Well, he's quite a handsome man, I think.
No, shucks, you know. I will say, you know, Southern California is a lot more open-minded than where I come from. Central California, a lot of people don't know, is agriculturally based, a lot of conservatism. So I dealt with a lot of religious pushback from people who were, you know, more on the fundamentalist side of things. And so while some people were open to what I did in my small town, others weren't. And very often people would meet with me secretly. They wouldn't tell their husbands. But all that to say, I think the demand started coming from Southern California because people there geographically are just a lot more open to the creative fields, the spiritual, at least comparative to where I'm from. And so naturally I had a draw from there. Before I knew it, I was going to Southern California. My first celebrity client was with Sarah Paulson of American Horror Story. And Sarah Paulson was an incredible experience for me as just a teenager. But that was my first celebrity reading. And then it kind of just evolved from there. But I always say the power of word of mouth is an incredible thing. If you're real, if you're able to give people something validating, you shouldn't have to advertise.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
So you've used this phrase reading a bunch of times. What is that? Like, how do you conduct a reading? Like, what happens in a reading? Do you just kind of like concentrate on the person and start to get messages? Talk us through what that actually looks like.
Absolutely. So when I do a reading, I scribble, and scribbling is really my methodology of kind of turning on, so that when I'm not scribbling, I can kind of turn off. The premise of that practice is really repetition. It's not the scribbles themselves that have any significance as much as it's the process of repetitively scribbling back and forth. We see that a lot in other religions as well, repetition being something that helps people get into an altered state of consciousness, sometimes transcendental states. Mm-hmm. I even think of within Catholicism, right? You have the rosary and people will pray it repeatedly. There's something about repetition that just helps us get into a different state of mind. And scribbling is that for me. Once I get into that kind of meditative state, I just basically have to focus on any impressions that come through. And I use the word impression because people think of psychic abilities as like seeing dead people walking around. And I wish it were that easy, but it's really not. When I do a reading, I just get these little impressions, little sensations. Sometimes it'll feel like a memory that's not mine. Sometimes it'll feel like a song that's stuck in my head, but it might be a sentiment or an idea. And then other times I'll even get physical sensations in my body that correspond with how somebody passed. So the best way to understand it is really to think of my body as kind of like a canvas. And the spirits that come through, I believe, kind of paint the picture using my senses to communicate what they want to say.
Hmm. And of these messages, and you're doing several readings a day, I imagine, and you've received thousands of messages from the other side. What's the most common message that you've received in your reading?
I would say one of the most powerful messages universally across the board is the importance of saying it now while we still have the chance. So many people that sit in the chair across from me are sitting in front of me because something is unresolved. They either have regret because something went unsaid or something went undone. And that's even under the best case scenario. You know, we have situations where people will be ill for 8 months and we know they're going to die and we have that little send off. And even those are difficult because people still wish they would have done more in hindsight. So for me, the greatest takeaway is the importance of validating those relationships in the here and the now while we have the chance so that we can prevent future regret. So I live my life differently as I go about my relationships. I ensure that I'm communicating everything when I can. And I just, you know, try to not go to bed angry. It's a famous quote, but it's true. You know, try not to go to bed angry. Say it because you never know when you won't have the chance to.
Yeah.
Hey, Rain.
Yeah.
I love you, man.
What do you have to say to me?
I love you, man. I love you. That's all.
Oh.
I just feel like, you know.
Sweet.
It's a love fest. You got to communicate the love.
I want to say it now. I'm taking
it. Validate it. Exactly.
I want to say to you, Reza, I like you.
It's a slow burn. It's a slow burn.
Love is a strong word. It's a big commitment. Yep. I'm not quite sure I'm there yet.
Look, this is all very fascinating because I don't know. I mean, look, Rain and I were talking about this before the podcast started, and I'm not sure what I believe. It's hard. Like, I mean, I have this whole theory because I believe in God, and I have this theory that if you're willing to believe in God, then you better be open to some pretty fucking crazy ideas, right? Like, you'd be like, I believe in God, but ghosts, that's ridiculous.
Sure.
You know?
Totally.
So I am definitely open. But the truth is, Safa, our producer, you know, put together all these fascinating data points about American beliefs about the paranormal. 3 out of 4 Americans, 75%, believe in paranormal phenomenon. Nearly half of Americans believe in ghosts, like spirits that are among us. And by the way, this isn't just like spiritual people or like mystically minded people. Thomas Edison, very famously in 1920, tried to create a spirit phone. Like, you know, like a phone, except that instead of talking to living people, you talk to dead people. And it wasn't because he was interested in like spirituality or the spirit world. It's because he thought, well, you know, we can use science. Like, science will prove that there are, you know, these spiritual beings among us. So,
by the way, that would make an amazing horror film.
It really would.
Someone discovers in Thomas Alva Edison's warehouse the spirit phone that he created, and they crank it up, and it actually works.
Hold on, I'm writing right this down right now. Nobody else
Tyler,
steal this.
Will you,
we're selling this. I get 10%, you get 10%, we'll split it three ways. That's hilarious.
And also, like, you know, this is the other thing that I really like about, you know, the way that you talk and think about your abilities is that they're very spiritual for you. I mean, this is an expression of faith for you. I was reading in Here and Hereafter that you're constantly talking about this is a faith expression, what you do. And I guess that, you know, has partly to do with the fact that, as you were just mentioning, you grew up in a very conservative Christian environment. You know, I imagine there wasn't a lot of acceptance. I'm not sure. Maybe there was for these abilities that just kind of poured out of you when you were a teenager. Tell us a little bit about what that experience was like.
Sure. Well, my first premonition happened when I was 10 years old, and this would have been in April of 2006. And, you know, growing up, I had a very ordinary childhood, grew up in this conservative community. My parents have been together for over 30 years, and I'm an only child, so I got all the attention as a kid. But everything was pretty normal for me until 10. I basically just woke up one night, and I had this knowingness that my grandmother was going to die. And at the time, it just felt like a memory that hadn't happened yet, and I was really confused. And as I went to try to explain this to my mom, her phone rang, and as she picked it up, it was the news from my dad that he had just watched my grandmother die in front of him. So that was really the catalyst, but at 10 years old, that wasn't recognized as an ability. It was just a moment of knowingness. It was just an intuition, which is something we all have. So my mom didn't recognize that as something that I could do over and over and over again, and nor did I. But it took years of these kind of moments of epiphany to kind of realize that there was something more going on. In my personal belief, I think intuition and epiphany are directly related. And a lot of what people kind of attribute to being as aha moments might be intuition.
You said this, it kept happening again and again.
Yes.
How was your mom responding to that as it was happening again and again?
On one hand, I think she thought, okay, maybe Tyler just has a big imagination. But the difference was as I would share things with kids at school and they would validate them as being correct, such as talking about that a kid's parents just had an argument before school, or I would talk about family members of kids that I was around. And for some, it was like, oh, that's cool. And then other people were kind of afraid of me. But this got back to my mom, and she ultimately had to make the choice of either to accept it or not. But ultimately, I was able to demonstrate these moments of knowingness enough to convince her and my dad ultimately as well. And from there, they just kind of grew to accept it for what it was. I think when we know better, we can do better. And my parents are a great example of that, of loving your child unconditionally, no matter how different they might be.
That's so wonderful to hear. What about the rest of the community? Like
rest of the community, it was very divisive. It was actually very fascinating to see. As word of mouth spread about my ability, I started getting blamed for things that I never did. So in high school, for example, there was this bully, and he was a jock, and he broke a bone while at a football match. And I got blamed for it in my high school. They thought I, through witchcraft, had caused his injury. And then it was one thing after another. I would get, you know, attributed to things that there's no way, obviously, I could have been responsible for. But that goes to show kind of the dangers of superstition. And it might sound funny coming from a medium, but I actually think it's important that we embrace logic and critical thinking and the scientific method and not allow superstition to dictate our lives. Because if we do, it becomes like the Salem witch trials all over again. So it might be a weird take coming from the source, but that's what I believe.
That's fascinating. I never thought I'd be in an interview with a clairvoyant who would say, hey, we need to be logical and use science and not be filled with superstition. But I like that. I like what you're saying, because I, like Reza and listeners know, I also believe in God, and I believe in an afterlife, and I believe our souls, our essential kind of humanness, part of who we are, continues a journey through other planes of existence beyond this physical world. I mean, why not? The other idea just makes zero sense to me, that there's all of this beautiful creation and incredible consciousness, and then the lights get turned out and that's the end, and there is only a physical plane of existence. It really doesn't make sense to me. But regardless, the main reason we really wanted you on the show was we thought that you would have a unique perspective on grief. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to ask a couple of questions about grief and about dealing with grief. I have mentioned before on the show, my father passed away about a year and a half ago. That was the first close family member that I'd ever lost. And it was very devastating. The thing I found very interesting about it was, And I still grieve him to this day, a year and a half later. And don't do a read. I don't want to know what he's got to say, by the way. I don't want to know anything.
We don't want him. That public.
I'm fine with him over there. But a couple of things came up for me. One was I missed him so much and hurt my heart so deeply to lose him. I felt like we had a good 10 or 15 years left to connect as father and son that we didn't get to do. He died at 79. And I also, you know, I had a difficult childhood and I had some very real resentments of the guy. And he was really not there for me in a lot of ways and was a pretty lousy father in a lot of ways too. And kind of wrestling with both of those was really challenging. Of like, wow, I miss and love you so much. And still I had so many unmet needs from you and I have some resentments left. And we worked this shit out and he knew how I felt. And there was nothing left unsaid there. But it was that really flavored the grieving process. And you say that your task is for the people that you're meeting with, your clients, is to bring hope and healing and closure to people. And this reminds me of my stepmom, my dad's wife, who really has a feeling of a presence of him around and continues conversations with him. And I know lots of widows that do this, continue conversations with their past ones. And sometimes I will. Sometimes I'll just talk to him. I don't know exactly if he's hearing, but I'll just speak from my heart or just say, you know, I miss you, Dad. And you know, even ask for help or guidance in some way. To these people, let's just say widows, for lack of a better word, this conversation, this ongoing conversation, which is done by about 3/4 of them, by the way, brings great solace to them. So how do these conversations that you undertake, how do they fit into the grieving process and help people with their healing and their closure?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think when it comes to grief, that on some level, grief is the price that we pay for love. Mm. And I find reminders of that every day in the work that I do. But more than that, I find that grief is an ongoing process. We think of the word closure as being a final process, almost like a period at the end of a sentence. But my job has taught me that the process of closure is so much more than that. It's more of a comma. It's ongoing. And we have to process all of these feelings that we have about these people in our lives. And we take that with us, as do they. So I think if anything, you know, people think that grief shrinks over time. And I don't believe that. I think if anything, we grow around our grief. It's like weight. You know, we hold it in different places. We carry weight in different places. And it's very different depending on the person.
But more specifically, so what is this process? I mean, I've seen some videos of you and people are crying and you've obviously touched nerves and they're able to process some grief. But how does the conversation heal?
It's a release. And I always say, you know, people are like, Tyler, is it weird when you make people cry? And I'm like, no, it's actually a good thing. It is a release. It's representative of the fact that that person is hearing something that is bringing things to the surface that need to be processed. And just doing that can sometimes be cathartic for a person. It can be intense, but it can also leave a person, I believe, transformed in a way that was different than when they initially sat down. All that to say, though, readings are not a cure for grief. A medium is not a cure for grief. All I believe I do is validate that there is a connection, that there is love. I believe the consciousness continues on, but it's important that we honor that physical loss, even if we are a spiritual person. I think people think of it as, if, you know, mediums don't grieve, but we do. So, you know, it's kind of an amalgamation of all of those things. It's meant to validate that there's still something there, but it's never meant to replace that person.
Is there a cure for grief?
I don't think so. I think grief is one of those aspects of suffering that is universal. I think it's something that we all will go through if we live long enough, or we will be grieved ourselves. So for me, it's just kind of one of those difficult truths of reality. I think while some spirituality might want to just kind of erase grief, I actually am all about embracing grief as a process, something that is natural, something that even if you believe in God and a higher power, it's okay to still cry. It's okay to still want to pick up the phone and call them, want to give them a hug. Being spiritual doesn't make all of that better, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, even Jesus wept. Shortest sentence in the Bible. Jesus.
There you go. Absolutely.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Is this what is often meant when we talk about the difference between grief and grieving? That like grief is that emotional state that just like tears you up. You know, it just comes over you unexpectedly like a wave, just, you know, leaves you devastated. But grieving is this kind of forever process, right? It's a thing that you just carry with you forever. It transforms the way that you think about the world. Is that kind of like what you're talking about?
Absolutely. You know, grief puts us in a liminal state, and liminal states are defined as threshold states. And they typically occur very often when someone goes through a big life change, where we are thrust into transition and familiarity is lost. So think of like divorce, illness, the death of a loved one. That is very transformational. That puts us in a liminal state. And liminal states, by definition, are transformative. So as difficult as they are, as disorienting as they are, the liminality of life is where we get the most information. Those times in our lives when we have nothing secure to hold on to, when familiarity is lost, and when we are basically just feeling like we're having to fend for ourselves. That very often is where we see a lot of growth in people's lives. But I also just think it's an inevitability of life. I don't think we can eliminate liminality, nor should we. That's just my thoughts on it.
First of all, I just want to say I love this idea, this definition. Grief is the price we pay for love. That's so, so good. And I also really like what you're saying about how the grieving process, you know, as a experience of liminality is fundamental to, you know, our understanding of who we are. You have this whole thing in the book that you say early on in the, I think in the introduction or prologue, where you say that your experience of being a medium and being in communion, you know, with people who have passed, has actually helped you understand the universe and your place in it. And I wonder, I mean, not all of us obviously have the ability that you have, but in grieving, it's the closest we come in a way, right, to communing with the other side. I mean, maybe for us it's a one-way street, not a two-way street the way it is for you. But in a way, that little touch that we get, you know, of the other side helps us to understand what it means to be human. So like grieving can be a fundamental part of the human experience, a thing that you actually want to experience, right?
And to that point, I think it's because it's an inevitability, there's aspects of this where we can either choose to embrace it or reject it, but either way, it's going to happen. And so in my work, I've seen when it comes to how we can best move forward through grief, the best thing I can just say is to try to honor those who have died through your actions. You will never be able to introduce that loved one that you cared about to new people, to new members of family, but you can introduce the love that they gave you, or even in Rain's case, maybe some of the challenges that were presented in that relationship. You can learn from that, and then you can extend those lessons to other people that are alive in your life. And in that way, that is an afterlife that they get. when they can make a difference in our lives, we can take the initiative and kind of introduce their essence through our actions. There's something almost alchemical about that to me, in how the loss of somebody actually can sometimes make us more whole.
I'm curious, Rain, why do you not want Tyler to do a reading? I'm just curious about it.
Because I don't want to cry.
Okay, that's okay.
Absolutely.
No, there's some truth to that. But yeah. I guess because for me, I do have closure. Like, I got to be with him. He was going in for a quadruple bypass surgery. We knew there was a chance he wouldn't make it. I got to spend the hours before he went in with him together. I got to pray with him when he was on life support. And, you know, and I've fully grieved. I also really believe in the process of not just grief when someone dies, but listen, we live in a culture, Tyler, wouldn't you agree, that doesn't know what to do about death or how to talk about death.
That's for sure.
When it's the one thing that we all share and doesn't know what to do with or how to talk about grief and loss. So death and grief and loss are just sewn into the fabric of life. And I feel like I had my process and I feel good about it. And I still pray for the progress of my father's soul. I still connect with my father. So it's kind of like I'm good. And I hope I'm saying that not out of some kind of denial, like,
no.
But that's not something that I would need necessarily.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Not everybody needs a reading and not everybody needs to see a medium. And that's one of those beautiful things where if we can get to a place in our own grief where we at least are content, I think that's a really beautiful thing. So,
I've got this kind of, weirdly opposite thing. My father died 5 years ago. I don't think I ever really grieved about it. And it's not like I kept myself from grieving. You know, my wife to this day still brings it up sometimes. And I have delved deep into my soul searching for the grief. And I loved my father very much. I mean, we weren't, incredibly tight. I recognize all that he did for me and the way that he loved me the best that he could and all that he sacrificed for me and sort of leaving Iran and coming here with nothing and starting all over again. And he had it was a slow demise that then became a quick demise. You know, it often happens. So it's not like his death was surprising. But I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I think about grief as the price we pay for love. And I was like, well, I don't really grieve. And I don't think I ever really did grieve my father's passing. What is that? Does that say that I didn't love him? I'm confused. Help me out.
I think of it as like a weight, right? And we all carry weight differently. And there's a reason I say it that way. Some people, grief looks like sobbing into their hands every single day for years. I've sat with clients who've lost loved ones, sadly, who it may have been a decade ago, and you would swear it's just as fresh as it was, you know, when it first happened. So I think everyone carries it differently. There's no shame in not being devastated by the loss of somebody. If anything, I think that gives us an upper hand in being able to remember their lives and honor their lives more meaningfully. From what I can take from those who've communicated with me, they want us, when we think of them, to not define their whole life by a single moment of death. And it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're at a place where you can think about that whole long life and your relationship, and I'm sure it had some highs and some lows, but you're okay. You're content on some level with how that happened. And so I don't think, you know, it's indicative that you don't love your father. It's just indicative that you're carrying that grief differently than maybe somebody who loses a child, or maybe somebody who didn't have, you know, that contentedness towards the end. So one of the biggest messages, there's no real right or wrong way to grieve, as much as I think we can't lay down and die. And it's important that we have support systems, resources, no matter where we are in our grief, to be able to feel okay with where we're at.
Tyler, your book is called how wisdom from the departed can transform your life now.
Subtitle.
Can you give us the, what is it? can you give us a sneak peek? How would you boil down how this wisdom from the departed can transform your life? And does it relate to grief?
Absolutely. So I always say that in all the readings I've done, the one thing I'm certain of is that there is something along the lines of a life review process. And every single person that comes through to me seems to be some version of themselves that seems a little bit more in the know or more aware than they were when they were here. I attribute this to a process that I think consciousness goes through when we die. It's a process of expansion in which we see the ripple effect of how every action and inaction affected the greater collective. In life, unfortunately, we are limited to our one perspective, our one body, and that often is kind of all we can really fully understand. But I believe that when they die, they get this kind of interconnection in a way that allows them to empathize and understand what was important in life and what wasn't, what was worth focusing on, what never was. And I think that gives these consciousnesses a sense of clarity and ultimately an acceptance around how they lived and how they died. And that's when we talk about finding peace on the other side, I believe that's kind of the end game, is being able to come to a place of full acceptance. All of that to say that this gives people a very immense understanding of the importance of taking the initiative when given the opportunity to not, you know, withhold saying things, doing things, ensuring that we are validating each other in the here and the now. And I think if anything, you know, when it comes to mediums, people sit with me because they have regret. And if we can do certain things and live in a certain way, we can at least minimize the chances of us having regret in the future. So that for me is really what it's all about. I want people to read that book and not have to go run off to a medium and maybe validate those who are still with them so that we have the best chance possible of having a sense of contentedness when the time comes that we do lose somebody.
But I love how you're framing it, because what you're talking about is self-help. Living your best self is living a life that you are not going to feel that regret when you die, when you do that life review, when you feel like I did what I could with what I had. And anything that we can do in our daily practice, our spiritual practice, to remind us of that fact, it brings us into greater consciousness. I love that you're taking the reader in that direction.
Do the life review while you're still alive.
Right, exactly. And it kind of ties into Carl Jung's concept of individuation, which I am a huge proponent of. And I believe that consciousnesses on the other side go through this individuation process. I think they become more of themselves. Just as in life, I think we are all gradually, every day, becoming more of who we are. And we should strive to be more of ourselves. I think there's a lot of power in that idea.
Tyler, I'm suddenly nervous. I'm a little bit nervous about this. I have to say, like... I'm kind of open if you want to do a reading of me, I guess. I've never had one. I can tell you right now, I've never had anything like it at all. And I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, I totally get it. What I need typically is a notepad and a pen, and usually about an hour. So what we can do is, that's the only downside, is typically it takes a little time to get into it.
Okay, well maybe we do it later and then I report on it.
Cool. That'd be really
cool. Would love that.
Okay. Yeah, yes. I famously don't experience emotions the way most humans do. I think I've cried 4 times in the last 30 years.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
Not that I'm like, I try not to. It's not like I'm like, I will not cry. But it goes back to the grieving thing. You know, I can theoretically, like when I think about, God, heaven forbid, anything happening to my wife or my children, like I can barely breathe. But when I think about sort of, you know, the people that I've lost and the way that I grieve them, it's like I'm searching for something that's not there. I keep digging and digging and digging, and I'm like, it's got to be there somewhere, but then it's not. And then I think to myself, well, maybe there's just something wrong with me. I don't know.
It's amazing, though, how the grief process, even though it involves the death of other people, how much it teaches us about ourselves, right? And I mean, obviously, there was a lot of love there, and there's nothing wrong with how you're grieving, but it's just fascinating how it brings all those things to the surface. And that really speaks, I think, to kind of the liminal nature of grief. Anytime we go through liminal experiences, they bring stuff up to the surface that we got to look at And, you know, for better or for worse, that's kind of the benefit, at least. It lets us kind of focus on what we need to focus on at that time.
Tyler Henry, this has been such a fascinating look. And honestly, I've never really thought about grief in these terms. And I've never even really thought about the idea of, you know, the connection to the afterlife in these terms. You know, the notion of truly experiencing life by connecting to the afterlife it's just a beautiful way of thinking about it. And I'm totally, totally grateful for this conversation.
Likewise. And Rain, if you ever want a reading, I'm always here, of course, free of charge for both of you. And I would love to connect if you're ever ready. So offers always withstanding.
I want to see you weep.
Yes. Just burst into tears. Be very stoked. It might get caught in his beard.
<That's true. laughs> Oh, and he's hiding.
There you go. We'll get absorbed.
I cry easy. I cry at the drop of a hat. So
the book is Here and Hereafter. It's available now. And the Netflix series, which is available for streaming right now, is called Life After Death. And, you know, fingers crossed for a season two, because, you know, there's a lot of life and death to talk about.
No shortage of clients there. Yeah. It just keeps happening.
Do you think you'll give readings to people when you're on the other side? What would that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've wondered before if guides on the other side, which is talked about extensively in spiritualism literature, if like those guides maybe weren't mediums in this life. Who knows? It's a theory, not one I necessarily endorse.
What happens when a bunch of mediums get together?
Oh, they're all conferences? Crazy. Mediums are such anti-structural people by nature, so they very rarely get along fully. We're usually kind of like loners. It's a very interesting thing. There's a lot of patterns among anti-structural people, and you see it in mediums for sure.
You talked about the life review process. You talked about the ever-expanding consciousness, which I relate to because I've been thinking about human consciousness. You know, a baby in the womb has a certain measure of consciousness. They can recognize light, heat, sound, movement, etc. Then a baby, and consciousness isn't just there when we're born. It grows and develops. I have a teenage son. I get to see with him every 3 or 4 months, like new forward steps in his consciousness as he grows into adulthood. I think the point is to increase our consciousness. You know, I would say consciousness is kind of set when we're in our early 20s, but we want to grow that through to our 80s or 90s, and we want to continue that process on the next side. But what happens after we die, Tyler? The life review process,
yes,
and the ever-growing consciousness, it's obviously some kind of plane that's a little bit above and beyond time and space.
Right, so non-linear.
Non-linear, it's non-physical, but what else can you tell us about the other side? Give us some tidbits.
What I will say is anytime I've tried to get answers on like, who is the right God, or is there a heaven or a hell, they liken it to trying to explain arithmetic to a squirrel, and I'm the squirrel in this equation. And it's not a cop-out as much as it's really just to say, I think we as human beings are so limited in what we can understand about this realm, let alone the next. Mm-hmm. But that to say, I do think that the other side, when they come through, they acknowledge that whatever process they're going through, it's experiential. It doesn't seem to come through as a physical place. It seems to be based or rooted in experiential consciousness, expansion of awareness, interconnection, and really kind of superseding one's ego. All of that to say, I don't even necessarily know what all of that means or what it implies or what that could indicate as far as our purpose goes. It's just more of these observations that I've made through time. So I genuinely don't have the answer. I think it's part of the great mystery of life. It's beautiful in and of itself.
Do you think they do anything up there over there?
I wonder. You know, they don't come
through
necessarily
like jobs
hobbies,
or create
jobs.
Things.
You know, it doesn't come through in that way, but who's to say they don't? You know, I try to be open-minded, but I also am not afraid to say I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Well, I am not afraid to say that I don't know how we're going to end this podcast. But I will say, Tyler, this has been an absolute pleasure. I love your forgive my using the word, your spirit. We were complimenting your writing of this book is so exquisite. And it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you. Reza, hey, listen, checking back in with you here at the tail end of this podcast because we need to air the Tyler Henry podcast, but we haven't gotten our our sessions yet. We haven't gotten our readings yet. What gives? What's going on?
Well, I did want to tell you this earlier, but I did meet with Tyler. He did communicate with my dead father, and my father did have a message for me. It was that he wanted me to tell you to be nicer to me. So that's from the beyond.
Wait a second. Wait a second.
All right, I'm lying. No, listen, folks. It's I am basically in line to see Tyler Henry. I think I had this idea that, like, as an important podcaster, that I would just basically end the podcast and then, like, go to his house and have him do a reading. And he was like, yes, I'm sorry, you are 200th in line for a reading. And I was like, I'm sorry, what now? There are 200 people in front of me.
Well, here's what I love about the Tyler Henry organization is they don't prioritize celebrities.
Yeah, that was kind of nice.
Which is really cool. So if he's met a dishwasher who wants a psychic reading, they go in that line of 200.
They're in line, yeah.
We're put at the end, and they don't, like, whisk Gwyneth Paltrow to the front of the line.
I was thinking about pulling a Rainn Wilson and being like, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? I mean, like, get me into the front. So, folks, sad to say that this reading has not happened yet, which I'm not going to pretend that I'm, like, bummed about. Like, I'm kind of nervous about it. I'm a little bit, like, I'm not exactly sure. You know, as we talked about during the interview, I haven't really, yeah. I don't think, processed my, the death of my father, even though it's been, like, I don't know, a while. It's been, like, almost coming up on 8 years or something. I was a little bit nervous about it. So it'll happen. It'll happen eventually. You know, maybe I'll tweet about it. But it has not happened just yet.
Well, when it does happen, we must get this information out there and share with people. I'm really excited to see how that goes. Folks, listen, as we sometimes do here at Metaphysical Milkshake, we're going to be giving away some copies of Tyler's new book, Here and Hereafter. So the first five people that write a review for Metaphysical Milkshake on Apple Podcasts, email us a screenshot of that review. It could be good. It could be bad. We're open. I mean, the bad ones might go to the bottom of the pile, but nonetheless, you can write us always at metaphysical@castmedia.com. That's cast with a K. metaphysical@castmedia.com. The first five will be sent a copy of Tyler's amazing book. What an incredible human being.
And if you have any life big questions, you can always, of course, find us on social media at Reza Aslan and at Rainn Wilson. We're also on Twitter at Meta Milk Podcast and on Instagram at Metaphysical Milkshake. You can also please remember to follow, rate, and review Metaphysical Milkshake on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to podcasts. And you can subscribe to the Metaphysical Milkshake YouTube channel. Watch our full episodes every week. See how extraordinarily handsome Tyler Henry actually is. Otherwise, we will see you next week. Unless we're dead. Then only Tyler will see us next week.
Only Tyler will be able to. I wonder if we could have a podcast from the great beyond and Tyler could interpret it for the listener.
I will say at this point, the only people who don't have a podcast are dead people. So it seems like the next natural progression.
That's the
progression.
Next step. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for listening, everybody.
See you next week.
Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rainn Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It is produced by Safa Samazadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick DeMaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. Original music by Jeff Tang.
Tyler Perry? Tyler Perry?
Wait,
did you?
I'm sorry.
You called
you're
him
not
Tyler
Perry?
Something.
I just assumed.
You know, I left the drag at home. I did not present as Madea today, but it's an honor to be.
He is a master of disguise, and sometimes he dresses like a, you know, mid-20s white guy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.